I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division to order. A quorum is present. Representative Fabian, have you reviewed the minutes from March 26th?
Mr. Chair, I have, and I move the minutes as written.
Fabian moves March 26th minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Representative Poppy, I will move that House File 2034 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Poppy, please present your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this is House File 2034. This bill seeks increased program funding for county feedlot officers who are delegated authority from the PCA to oversee feedlot operations. It's been more than 15 years since they have received an increase, and during that time they have had two funding reductions. So I have a test fire here, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Martinson, and he'll be able to talk to you more about the need.
Mr. Martinson.
Good evening, Chair and members. My name is Brian Martinson, policy analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers. I'd like to thank Representative Poppy for carrying this legislation on behalf of the 50 counties that have delegated authority from the PCA to oversee the feedlot program. These county officers have authority over more than 80% of the registered feedlots statewide and are responsible for the registration and inspection of operations and work with operators, planning and zoning, SWCDs, and watershed districts to improve environmental protections. By delegating this authority, the MPCA reduces their workload and can focus and providing oversight and program support, while the local officials can have more regular individual contact with farmers and be more involved in outreach and education efforts. Base funding for these delegated responsibilities has not been increased since 2002, but has been reduced twice. During that time, the county level costs and responsibilities have both increased, and in addition, the delegated counties are required to provide matching funds for most of these program dollars to pass through. We would ask for your support of this proposal for a program funding increase to help county feedlot officers fulfill their responsibilities on behalf of the state. Thank you, Chair and members.
Are there any questions? Are there any questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Poppy, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill and appreciate your support.
I renew my motion that House File 2034 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
Thank you.
Representative Sandsteve. I will move that House File 1699 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Sandsteve, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present House File 1699. This bill concerns the Hill Annex Mine State Park in Marble just outside of Calumet. The park was created on the site of the Hill Annex Mine, which, when it closed in 1978, was the sixth largest in the state, producing 62 million tons. In 1986, it was placed on the National Register of Historic Places and was designated as a state park in 1988. The DNR has identified the current model of the park as unsustainable and had been moving towards closing it. In anticipation of this, 2017's Omnibus Environmental Bill created a working group of the DNR, the IRRRB, the Western Mine Planning Board, and the City of Calumet and Itasca County to develop an alternative operating model for the park going forward. That bill gave the working group a deadline of January 15, 2018 to submit a plan. The group held four public meetings and developed a report, and it was determined a more comprehensive concept plan and feasibility study was needed. Funding for the park under its current structure ends on June 30th of 2019. This bill would appropriate $260,000 for the DNR to operate the park until June 30th of 2023. This funding would be supplemented by revenue from tours, shop sales, and other activities in the park. The bill also appropriates $150,000 of one-time money to Itasca County for the expenses of a park advisory group comprised of representatives from the DNR, the IRRRB, the City of Calumet, Itasca County, and the Western Mine Planning Board, charged with identifying options for sustainable and viable options of the park site, including developing a concept plan, conducting a feasibility study, identifying possible alternative park management options, continuing local partnership development, and other activities the park advisory group deems necessary and appropriate to move the park to a more viable, sustainable future. The DNR would assist the group in studying these alternatives. Also under this bill, the DNR would no longer allocate costs for fleet facilities, professional services, or lease payments, and would be charged with working alongside communities to identify and coordinate volunteers to supplement the park operations. Folks in our regions have worked extremely hard to come up with a solution that preserves this historic park. It has a great educational, historical, cultural, and scientific values and resources that are all worth protecting. It is truly a one-of-a-kind park. There is not another state park in Minnesota like this. The park's geological landscape provides one of the best places to find fossils anywhere in the country, and I'm going to go ahead and pass around some of the shark's teeth that can be found there. And attracts a great number of fossil hunters. I've worked with stakeholders in the DNR to arrive at peace in the valley. I'd appreciate your support in passing this legislation to provide a bit more time to make sure we can take full advantage of this and get it done right. Last year I carried a similar bill providing for more time to plan, and it was included in the ultimately vetoed omnibus bill. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm open to any questions.
Any questions? Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do remember this bill because I remember thinking how cool it was that you can find fossils in a state park. So last year being an even numbered year, I didn't make it to as many state parks as I would have liked to, but we'll have this park on our list for this year.
Please come. Thank you.
Do you have any testifiers?
I do have a couple of testifiers if we have time. This is Joe Abeda. He is a city council member from La Prairie.
And I'm also on the Western Mississauga Mine Planning Board.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. I moved to Minnesota in 2008, and I moved to Calumet. And all I heard about was mining. But then I got digging into the history of mining on the Iron Range and how it's benefited this state greatly, and it still does today. And through working in the mines, I've worked with some of the most technological equipment out there and automation in the concentrator plants. And it took me doing some research into the history of mining in Minnesota for me to actually realize that it started with pickaxes and horses and mules. And when you go through the Hill Annex mine tour, you can see and feel history that shaped this state to what it is today. And to be able to take my kids there and allow them to find a fossil that sat there for millions of years, and they're the first ones to pick that up and take it home and explain to them what Dad does now and what they did back then, is just a great, great deal of pride to be able to see the look on their face. My kids are 6, 2, and 8, and they understand what we mean when we say there's someplace we came from. And this is something that we need to preserve because we benefit all across the state through mining today. And we are very proud on the Iron Range of where we've come from and where we got to still go. So we would really appreciate any support on this to help us be able to sustain this ourselves.
Any questions for the testifier? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee.
Looks like the DNR wants to talk.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. While we do support the concepts within the bill, we do have some concerns, just small concerns related to the shared services piece. First, let me back up and say the department has agreed to continue the operation of this bill through 2021, of this park, I should say, at current funding levels. I've personally had many meetings with the Western Mississauga Mine Planning Board. over the interim, as well as with our Parks and Trails Division and now current Commissioner Sarah Stroman. If the legislature decides to appropriate general fund money to do this, that would be great. But our concerns really lie into the language on 2.22 to 2.25 with the prohibition on shared services. This is the way that we fund these fleet, facility, and lease payments throughout the park system. We allocate costs to each facility. This language here would prohibit us from capturing the lease payments that are required to the school trust fund for this park from the Hill Annex Mine account. Also, the fleet, facilities, and professional services that would be charged to this park would have to be shared to other parks across the system. So we support the concept. We want to work with the author and the community to develop a future for this park, but allocating those costs to different parks throughout the system will just have to spread out that problem.
Any questions for Commissioner Meyer? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, Representative Sandstead said in the opening comments that the park was designated as, I believe you said, unsustainable. Can you give me clarification what that means?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, you need to look at the history of the park. The park was received from the IRRB back in the late 70s, early 80s, and it was a mine, and it still is a mine, as we talked about. It's the visitation and the usership at the park is not what it is at other park systems, and as you know, Representative Fabian, having parks in your district that do not have a ton of participation, we'd have to come up with alternative management methods to deal with some of those things. One has been looking at hours and tour operations. There used to be a large boat tour down there. We have since ceased that just because of funding restrictions within the system. And again, trying to allocate, operate an entire park system, looking at where we can operate things. This park is limited right now, I believe, to about 2 days a week. We're trying to work with volunteers to help operate and staff that facility. The main part of the tour is a bus tour right now that is in operating order, but our concerns would be if that bus were to be broke down or have to be replaced with a capital.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just if you have a long discussion, which I don't want to do tonight, but you've made a commitment to fund this park at its current level. Are you making commitments to fund, say, Hayes Lake State Park or Lake Brunson State Park at current levels, too? Representative Sandstead knows that last year I was a reluctant as a chair of the committee, but in the end, I think maybe she wore me down or something, or I just, and we put it in our bill. So, you know, for me, I appreciate what you're trying to do, and I've told you that several times, but we have an entire park system that deserves, I mean, the folks in my district deserve the same treatment that you do. So, to Assistant Commissioner Meyer, what assurances do we have in other small parks around the state that you've already mentioned?
Mr. Chairman, members, again, we cannot predict the future. I cannot predict the funding the department will receive for this biennium. Our commitment to that funding level was based upon no reduction in our current park funding and actually funding within the park's budget at or above current levels right now. So the situation with this park is a little bit different than other parks in the system where it's operated on a limited schedule currently. So it's only open 2 days a week right now, only for parts of the season, mostly the summer, the park operation hours. So Hayes Lake is open 7 days a week. There's other opportunities there. This facility consists of, there's no camping, there's some day use areas and some touring facilities. We don't have a permanent manager on site, things like that. So it's more of a satellite park than anything else, but we do recognize the value of it to the community, and we want to work with the community to determine a sustainable future for that facility.
Thank you. And just to be clear, the funding that you referred to that you said is at or above what's needed, that was a result of which bill?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, what we were referring to is this next biennium, but the parks funding has been stable thanks to the legislature in the past but several bienniums.
Thank you.
Representative Sandstead.
Mr. Chair, I have another testifier, County Commissioner Ben DiNucci from Itasca County. And as he comes up, I do want to just say last year's bill, which this year is a reflection of last year's bill, I worked diligently with the DNR in putting this bill together. Many meetings, many conversations to come to consensus, to have peace in the valley. I am really shocked that I am hearing what I'm hearing today. This is the first I've heard about it. This bill has been out there for over a year. to work on, to find peace, to work on any issues that are out there. Have conversations 3 minutes before committee starts is not appropriate. So I apologize that that is happening, that there was plenty of time to work on this.
Commissioner DiNucci.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ben DiNucci. I'm a Itasca County Commissioner. Alliance Mine State Park is in my home district in Itasca County. And as you've heard, this is a unique park. It is a place where the visitors are transported back in time to the working operation of Taconite Mine. All the assets are in place. In addition to that, it's a place where children, families, can walk and pick up fossils that, for example, have gone around the table. And that's very unique. And this is also a unique request. And the question does come up, well, why not Scenic State Park? Why not Schoolcraft? And that's the answer. It's a one-of-a-kind. It is a rare park. There's nothing else like that, like this, in the state. Along with that, this park has had some disadvantages, as we've heard. It's only open 2 days. And the question always comes up, you know, why doesn't the park make money? Well, none of the parks make money. And this one especially doesn't, when it's open five less days than the other parks in the system. If you were to run a business, you certainly would maximize the advantages that you could being open. So that it also brings us to the request for the 150. We want to study it. We don't know. In addition to only being open 2 days a week, there's no admission. We don't know how many people are walking in. We don't know how many people are driving up and then turning around and leaving. We need to study that. We need to come up with a plan, a marketing plan, and as well as an operating plan. So I guess we are excited about this opportunity because we have an inspired, engaged, solution-oriented group of people that are willing to work on this. Not a group that's just going to cut and paste numbers from one spreadsheet over to the other spreadsheet, keep admiring the problem, but actually work on it, solve it, and try to bring it to a solution. And I'll just leave you with this. Every day we all benefit from the benefits of mining, whether it's from the ore that was mined to create the steel that won two world wars, or from the royalties from mining on school trust lands. We're quick to reach out and grab that check when it comes to reaping those benefits. Why are we hesitant to invest in keeping the heritage and the history of all those great things with us? Why do we slam the checkbook closed when it comes to investing in retaining that heritage? I thank you. I appreciate it. Appreciate your time. And I hope you will support this very important legislation.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Any questions? Representative Sandsteed, any closing remarks?
I would appreciate your support.
I renew my motion that House File 1699 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Representative Sandsteed. And listen, so this is a Water Division report. The next bill up. The next bill up is House File 663. This bill was heard in the Water Division and was re-referred back to this division without amendments. Representative Claflin, would you like to move adoption of the Water Division report?
I move the adoption of the Water Division report.
Without amendments. Representative Claflin moves the Water Division report on House File 663. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The report is adopted. I will move that House File 663 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Sandsteed and Representative Lislegaard.
And
there is an author's amendment?
There is an author's amendment.
A dual. And so we have an author's amendment, the E2 amendment. Representative Beckerfin, do you want to move that?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beckerfin moves the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the authors would like. Any discussion on that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Representatives, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
And members. House File 663 requests a one-time general fund appropriation of $4.5 million for DNR to perform monitoring, modeling, testing, pit slope stability studies, surveys, and engineering designs leading to mitigating threats due to rising water in the Canisteo Mine Complex, the Hill Annex Mine Complex, and the St. James Pit. Iron ore mining has been the economic backbone of northeastern Minnesota, and much of the iron ore produced provided major income for the state of Minnesota and its residents. Many of the open pit natural ore mines have been idled since the 1970s and 80s. As mining ceased, pumping of the water also stopped from those mines, resulting in pit water rising because of the lack of a natural outlet. Rising water leads to threats of public safety, for example, uncontrolled water overflows with damage to public and private property, bank sloughing, public nuisance hazards, and possible damage to surface and groundwater quality. Most of the surface property and minerals in these mine areas is owned by the state of Minnesota. The state receives substantial royalties, lease income, tax income when the mines produce iron ore, and the state stands to gain substantial revenue when these mines eventually reopen, should they reopen. These concerns ultimately and threats are best addressed before they result in significant damage or loss of life. The DNR staff are capable of addressing these issues if they have the funding to do so. The Canisteo group previously had rising water issues. These were addressed by legislation in 2008, Session Law Chapter 179. That appropriation was only partially used by the DNR for the intended project. Most of the appropriated funds were withdrawn at that time by the DNR. The Hill Annex Legacy pit water has been rising unchecked, and it has now risen to the level where it can enter groundwater and lead to increased likelihood of slope failures that endanger public property, private property, and public safety. We believe that the $4.5 million request for an appropriation to the DNR will be well spent to avoid preventing a growing threat or of life or property. That funding level is not adequate for construction. If construction is determined to be needed, but the monitoring and study planned by the DNR is expected to identify the best ways to handle the rising water concerns and place the state into a better position to make judgments on how to manage or mitigate the growing problem of the rising pit water. Representative Liz Legard is here to talk about the unique needs in his community.
Representative Liz Legard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Instead of, in the essence of time and repeating what Representative Sansevieri said, I have a wonderful gentleman, the mayor of Aurora, that came all the way here, 3.5 hours, to tell the very same story that I would tell. So, out of respect, if I could just let him give some comments.
Mayor Greger.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not sure I could equal the eloquence of Representative Liz Legard, but I'll try to at least convey the emotion and the immediate concerns of the city of Aurora relative to the St. James mine pit that's located on the north side of the city of Aurora, which is, for those who are not familiar, on the far east end of Minnesota's Iron Range. Currently, this is the pit that the city utilizes as the source of the city's municipal water. The mine land reclamation rules, which were put into effect and adopted in 1980, and now require mining operations to plan for closures and reclamation at the onset of the mining operations, were not in effect at the time that this mine was mined. And as a consequence, the state has assumed responsibility for the St. James and management of the water level. The water at the St. James pit is used not only for the city's water, but also for the water of the adjacent township. And the combined volume of the pumping of that water for those two large communities is still inadequate to prevent the levels of the water in the pit from rising. And just as a concrete example, in 2017, the water rose to within 6 inches of the city's stationary municipal water pumping station, and if it had gone much higher, it would have literally incapacitated that pumping capacity. So the efforts that the city put forth were to try to pump out with a 500-gallon per minute pump the excess of water, and notwithstanding those actions and operating it continuously for 240 days, the water level still had not been reduced below the 6-inch level to the pumping station. So in response to that, the city then was required to rent a diesel pump, a 2,000-gallon per minute pump, to pump the water out of this thing. I'm trying to give you an idea of the dimensions of the problem here. And that pump required 270 gallons of diesel fuel per day, as well as the rental fees. And with that assistance, and in the years we're pumping, about $186,480,000 in 2017, and in 2018, 180 million gallons of water. We've contracted with environmental firms to try to identify where this might stabilize, and the intent, I believe, of this bill is to provide funds to the DNR now to assume their responsibilities and better plan for some long-term resolution of this. In summary, the costs to the cities have been significant, and the need for aggressive dewatering absolutely is not going away. We need to avoid the impending catastrophic impact on the city, and in the form both of the imperiling of the city's water intake, but also in the huge amount of public investment on the shorelands for recreational improvements, and if it rises to a certain level, will start imperiling the basements and some of the more adjacent urban areas. So I ask your sincere consideration of the proposed funding, and I'd be glad to answer any questions if anyone has any.
Any questions for the testifier? Thank you.
Thank you.
I also have a couple of testifiers that would like to speak to this bill. We're going to bring Joe Abeda back to the table.
Mr. Abeda.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, members. Representative Sanasi, I think you did a really, really nice job in explaining the issues that we have there. As a member of the community, what I'd like to pass here is a picture that was taken in 2003 by the Herald Review when legislators came and took a tour. Thank you. Legislators came and took a tour of the pit and a few pontoons, and what you'll see at the top of the picture is a rail car that was carrying mining materials for several different types of operations. And that was in 2003. Shortly after that, that rail was shut down because it was so unsafe for that to come across that rail anymore because of the fear of it falling into the pit. Well, since then, that rail has been washed out by the rise in pit waters in the Slough, which we still don't know where it's going to stop or how far back it's going to go. And that's with the can of steel. The city of Bovis had plenty of measures taken and studies done, but the threat is still there, water in basements, and when we have snow and weather like we had this last winter, it becomes increasingly troublesome to us. And then when you look at the Hill Annex, there is serious threat of infrastructure, state infrastructure, when you consider the state park buildings that are at risk of also sloughing off and falling into the waters. So there is a real need to take care of this and do some real studying and planning and engineering, which I have full confidence that the DNR and the mining board and the communities can work together to get done. I would strongly urge that we move on this now. We've had failed promises with mines coming in and saying, we're going to control your pit water level. They came in and they basically put DNR on a hold because we had a 20-year promise. We're going to pump your water, and it worked great for a year or two. And then they went bankrupt, and that water was no longer being pumped, and it's been filling up for 2 years. Then we had another company come in and say, we're going to
started back up, and we felt a little ray of hope again, and that fell through again. So here we are, again, concerned about our rising pit waters. The communities are concerned about having to move their property somewhere else because of this issue. So I would just, from our communities, ask that we can move on this and help us really resolve this problem for real this time.
I remember former Representative Solberg talking about this years ago, over and over again. So I'm very familiar with it.
We are now losing infrastructure and just getting more infrastructure with no real indication as to when the sloughing is going to stop yet or groundwater is going to start to seep into people's basements again. So we have a real concern. The communities are really concerned about it as well. So I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and members for giving me a minute to talk about this.
Any questions for the testifier? Mr. DiNucci appears to have vacated the chair for a moment. So are there any other questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Any closing comments from Representative Sandstead or Representative Lissinger?
So, Mr. Chair and members, I can just say that I know on the western end of the range, the projects that we have been working on have been in the works for over 10 years of really looking at this, at least 10 years and probably longer than that. I can safely say 10 years. We are coming to you because the threat is imminent now. It is a real situation, and these are real communities that we talk about disaster relief needed because of flooding situations, because of our weather. This is going to take on a whole new level of need. And We're ready to move on this. The DNR is prepared to do this study. They need the funding to do this. We want to find the resolution that's going to be safest, most cost-effective, and something that we can take care of in short order. So your support would be greatly appreciated.
Liz Gardner?
Well, Mr. Chair, being on the council and a mayor in Aurora, I know that this issue is we're looking to find a resolution that's sustainable long-term, and the DNR, with their expertise and their ability to help navigate through that, is extremely important moving forward. And I can't say any more than what the mayor did. It's not a want. I mean, it's not something that we want. It's a need, right? And so when you get 6 inches to your drinking water, that's a serious issue. And set flooding aside, you know, people need to have the ability to have clean water, and it's you flood your pumping station and you've got a crisis. So I would appreciate the support. Again, it's not a want, it's a need, and any support we could get would be greatly appreciated.
I will renew my motion that House File 663, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Bill is laid over.
Thank you.
Representative Lippert, House File 797. This bill was heard in the Water Division and was re-referred back to this division with an amendment. Representative Fisher moves the adoption of the Water Division report.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's my motion.
Representative Fisher moves adoption of the Water Division report on House File 797. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. The report is adopted. I will move that House File 797, First Division Engrossment, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Lippert, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This last fall, there were severe storms that moved through southeast Minnesota. There was a tremendous amount of damage due to tornadoes in the Northfield area, Faribault area, and to the Roberts Lake area as well. A tremendous amount of cleanup has happened around the Roberts Lake area on private property, but there's still debris in the lake itself. And so this is a bill that authorizes $100,000 directed towards grants for local units of government to help with cleanup for the lake. And with me is Ted Tuma from the Roberts Lake Association. He can say more about the need.
Mr. Tuma.
Mr. Chair and members, thanks for allowing me to testify. My name is Ted Tuma, and I'm a resident of Rice County and live on Roberts Lake. Roberts Lake is located near Faribault. It's about 725 acres in size with a maximum depth of 40 feet, with most of the lake at 12 to 15 feet deep. Roberts Lake is one of the more popular lakes in southern Minnesota, used for fishing, water skiing, tubing, jet skiing, and pleasure boating. The lake has about 5 miles of shoreline. There are about 220 individual properties around the lake, along with two resorts. The resorts provide cabins, seasonal RV parking, camping sites, and restaurants. In September, normally lakeshore owners have their boats, pontoons, boat lifts, and docks in the water. Along with this, there's quite an assortment of lawn furniture and lawn ornaments along the shoreline. Last September 20th at about 6:20 p.m., we had several tornadoes near Frebel. The strongest of them hit our area. It was classified as an EF2, which is rated with winds at 111 to 135 miles per hour. It's capable of causing considerable damage. When the storm hit, much of what was on shore ended up in the water. Docks and boat lifts got twisted up and moved. Many of them remain in the water today. My neighbor's boathouse was completely destroyed, with the walls and the house contents gone entirely into the lake. The lake is an older, well-established neighborhood with many mature trees of all types. Unfortunately, many of the trees were uprooted or badly damaged. Many of them, or their large branches, ended up in the lake as well. In addition, the tornado took asphalt shingles, siding, insulation, and gutters off of many houses and blew them into the lake. Most of that remains in the lake today. I passed a couple of pictures around that show some of the branches that are still sticking out of the ice, out of the water. Those are attached to larger branches. Since this is a popular recreational lake, all of this debris will create a safety hazard. Some of the debris is visible on the lake surface. However, it's the more dangerous is the debris that is just below the water surface. Our concern is for both the personal safety and the boating hazards. Most people in the area are somewhat familiar with these conditions, but there are visitors and people who are new owners of homes around the lake. You can imagine the danger when there are kids on a tube or water skis moving fast and hitting a large, unseen object just under the water surface. The lake does have an active lake association, which has been having meetings and discussions on how to best handle a cleanup. There is no doubt that it will be a time-consuming task and require funding. There are pontoon barges fitted with equipment that would assist in this effort. In addition, it is likely that the divers will be needed to locate and then attach chains or ropes to larger debris so it can be brought to the surface. Then there will need to be trucks at the site to haul recovered items to a disposal location. We feel this is a necessary request considering the popularity of the lake in the summertime and our wish to avoid any tragic accidents this summer. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Is there anyone else in the audience? Oh, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lippert, what's the local match that you're planning in this effort?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian. I was talking with Senator Jasinski about that. I was carrying this on the Senate side. There isn't a local match plan, because the bed of the lake is owned by the state, is what Senator Jasinski was saying.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you have a Robbers Lake Association?
Yes, there is a lake association. That's correct. Yes.
Mr. Kuma. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I realize that the lake is owned by the state of Minnesota, but generally speaking, when we have issues like AIS and those other things, the local people pitch in. We had the peat thing that floated loose, the 4 or 5 acres up in the Brainerd area, and the local community had a stake in that, too. I'm surprised that you don't have a local match.
Representative Lippert.
I know that Senator Jasinski has been working with the county and also with the Cannon River Watershed Partnership and the Roberts Lake Association, too. So those organizations are involved in this work.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The author brings up a good point. When the disasters happen, these types of activities occur, and there's no funding source available for the cleanup. We've had similar issues down in southern Minnesota. The legislature has appropriated money for cleanup activities. Just a couple thoughts in mind. One is that we have a grant process in place that can handle these funds. The process includes being a willing, able LGU to submit a work plan. Then they do the work, and we reimburse the dollars to them. So perhaps we might want to think about, as this is moving forward, naming a local unit of government, so then we don't have to do an RFP. We can just do the grant directly to them. Any match, if there would be, could be covered by local inclined labor, things like that. I think we can work through that. The big concern I'm hearing is the availability of funding. And I don't know how to get around this, but the legislature often comes up with creative ideas. I think the Lake Association would like to have the money before the lake vegetation grows up, so we can see where the material is and get at it as soon as possible. So we do recognize the need for this kind of cleanup to occur. Hopefully we can talk about establishing a fund someplace in statute to allow these dollars to be drawn from as these activities occur in other parts of the state, so that local residents aren't forced to come here and seek funding to clean up the waters of the state. So we want to work with the legislature and the author and the residents to figure out a solution forward and a path forward for a more permanent type solution as well.
Commissioner, was that county in a designated federal disaster area?
I believe it was, but again, those types of funding sources don't, for some reason, cover the actual cleanup in the lake bed. They cover cleanup on shore, on land, but not within the water body. That's another thing for us to look at as well.
Any other questions? Representative Lippert, any closing remarks?
No, I just ask for your support. Thank you.
I renew my motion that House File 797, First Division Engrossment, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. That was laid over. Representative Lippert. The next bill up is House File 1569. This bill was heard in the Water Division and was referred back to this division with an amendment. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would recommend that the committee take it up. This was recommended to be approved by us, or recommended to be considered by the committee here, and the amendments are items that we added on in our committee.
Representative Fisher moves the adoption of the Water Division report on House File 1569. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. The report is adopted. I will move that House File 1569, First Division Engrossment, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Lippert.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
If I may, yep. You're talking about laying this over, and I'm looking at House File 159 and where it's been. In Section 1 of the bill, we're raising fees. The Commissioner of Health, I believe that falls under the jurisdiction of the Ag Committee, and I believe that the bill needs to go there.
I think Representative Fabian, Representative Fisher has the answer to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a separate bill for that fee that has gone over to Department of Health. You'll also notice that at the very end, there's also an item that is under Section 10, which deals with Department of Education. That is a separate bill that has already been referred over and has been heard by the Education Committee. So what we're trying to do is make sure that they were heard in this committee and also traveling to the other areas that they need to be.
Thank you.
And Representative Lippert, I believe you have an author's amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair.
I will move the... Representative Fisher, do you want to move the A190247 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like?
Yes, I will move the A190274 amendment.
74.
74.
To get the bill in the author would like. Is there any discussion about the amendment?
I can simply share that the amendment breaks the appropriation up for the working lands portion in Section 4. Breaks the appropriation up into 2 years, so the amount is needed annually to keep the program going on a longer-term basis. The language has changed from cover crops to winter annual crops because the program is specifically targeting crops that can be in the ground during the winter and early spring when the land is at most at risk to erosion. So that's the purpose of the amendment.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Lippert, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as Representative Fisher mentioned, this bill has many parts. Section 4 is a continuation of the working lands bill, and this is the pilot project phase for wellhead protection areas, planting winter annual crops, conservation crops in those wellhead protection areas. And then other bills from the Legislative Water Commission were amended onto this in the beginning of the end, giving working lands a nice hug. So I'll talk about working lands first and then talk about the other pieces second. We requested a fiscal note quite a while ago for the Legislative Water Commission portion of the bill, or for the bill as a whole, and that fiscal note did not get completed in time. So but we do have some general numbers to give a ballpark if that's helpful. So going to Section 4 in working lands, this is a continuation of an investment made in 2016 that allowed the Board of Water and Soil Resources to assess the environmental benefits and market potential of many perennial winter annual crops, to survey farmers in six major watersheds as to their familiarity with and interest in planting these crops on their less productive lands, to model impacts of land use changes on water quality and wellhead protection areas, and assess the amounts of subsidies needed to make these crops competitive with conventional row crops, reducing the risk for farmers. So working lands has support from a broad coalition of organizations. The Minnesota Farmers Union is in support because land owners want options for keeping ecologically sensitive lands in production. General Mills and PepsiCo are looking at ways to diversify food and bio-based products to meet changing consumer demands. And I believe a letter from General Mills passed out, and we have one if it hasn't been passed out. Minnesota Rural Water Association, Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water Supply, Rock County Rural Water, City of Adrian, and City of Edgerton are supportive as small communities because they understand how communities are struggling to provide clean, safe drinking water. And Bang Brewing and Virtual Cafe are a couple businesses that are starting to brew with Kernza, a new grain. There's a lot of potential through this bill to kind of boost that emerging market. So the working lands portion of the bill provides $8.5 million in general fund support to establish a pilot phase of the Working Lands Wellhead Protection Program. And of that $8.5 million, at least $7 million will be going to farmers to incentivize them using these conservation crops on these lands and to entering into longer-term contracts to make that viable for the producer. And there's some other financial pieces here. $400,000 for a 0.8 FTE for program administration, $500,000 to $700,000 for agronomic and technical assistance for producers, and roughly $200,000 for program management as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to Whitney Clark, who can say a little bit more about the bill.
Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Whitney Clark, Executive Director of Friends of the Mississippi River. We had testimony in policy committee, so I won't repeat a lot of that content. Just kind of hit some of the high points. We're very excited about this program. We feel like this is the beginning of a new era in agriculture in Minnesota, one that is grounded in perennial agriculture and that can really help to provide leverage to drive clean water, clean surface water, and groundwater to address some of these very intractable, wicked problems that I know you all have been thinking about and working on for some time. First important point to make and for you to remember is this is about pollution prevention, first and foremost, by
beginning to jumpstart these crops that farmers can plant. So these are working lands rather than taking land out of production. So we're spending this money rather than having to spend money cleaning up money. The policy approaches that we've largely taken to address drinking water contamination in Minnesota and surface water contamination in Minnesota have been a mixture of things that work but are hard to scale up to the size of the problem. We use set-aside programs, paying farmers to take land out of production. You can only do so much of that. We have to have a certain amount of land in production. Farmers need the income, and we need the crops that they grow on that land. We can incentivize producers to do best management practices to try to reduce the pollution impact, but there's only so far that those measures go. And we can regulate, and nobody really likes that approach. This is a different approach. This is beginning to jumpstart, incentivize a whole new way of doing it so that farmers who are planting these crops are actually delivering all the conservation benefits that we want while growing and selling a crop for market. So they won't need all the best management practices. Their crops will be providing most of those. So one thing that I want to make sure that the committee understands is that this program is really working at two scales. Of course, it's addressing drinking water protection. So we're going to target highly vulnerable DWSMAs, drinking water supply management areas, that are in row crops right now, places with elevated nitrates, where by putting in these conservation crops, we can actually begin to reduce the flow of nitrates into the groundwater, solving and preventing having to spend more money on solving those problems down the line by building denitrification plant like they're doing in Cold Spring or other places around the state. The other scale that this is working at is this is the beginning of a broader effort that we hope will begin to transform agriculture throughout the state that will not need state support to make it go. And that's transforming to develop so that farmers understand these crops. We're beginning to develop the markets, the offtake agreements, the supply chains, so that there's actually a market for these products and we don't have to subsidize it in a few years. So the last thing I'll say is I'll just echo Representative Lippert's comment about the coalition we built around this. This has a wide multi-sector coalition of support. We've got big agribusinesses like PepsiCo, like General Mills, who are excited about this program. We've got our rural cities and water suppliers all around the state who are excited about the approach that this can this approach can help prevent problems going forward and also start to solve some of those problems. We have, of course, the environmental community, we have the farmers union, and small businesses as well. Oftentimes, it's not often in this work that we have such a broad coalition with so many sectors. So it's exciting to be working on this. Thank you for your support.
Any questions for the testifier? Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify? Anyone else? Thank you, Mr. Clark. Representative Lippert, any closing remarks?
Jen Stark is, so for the working lands portion, I just urge support of that. I'm very excited about that legislation. Do you want me to comment on at all any other sections of the bill?
Not really.
All right, then I appreciate that and thank you for your support. Thank you.
I renew my motion that House File 1569, First Division Engrossment as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. I'm going to move to Representative Detmer. I know he's not feeling well, and I'd like to get him home so he can feel better.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Fabian, would you like to move Representative Detmer's bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 484 for probable inclusion.
No, to Ways and Means. We want to get it referred to Ways and Means
to get it moving.
I so move.
That's a way to be mean. But no, this House File, thank you for hearing the bill. House File 484 was passed through the House and Senate last year. It was far beyond this bill. This one of the sessions casualties with the bill being not passing the governor's desk. But anyway, the bill would authorize the immediate withdrawal of land and roads in the Metropolitan Agriculture Preserve when a state agency or other government unit requires the land in a fee, title, and obtains the easement for the purpose of creating, expanding a public trail or park. Well, that's all I'm going to say. It does have a fiscal note. It's a one-time filing fee of $125. So that's it. So that's probably why I'm going to Ways and Means. Okay. And I'd like to introduce the city administrator, Neil Soltis, and he'll kind of take us through the bill. Yeah.
Mr. Soltis.
Thank you. Chairman and committee. Currently, Minnesota statutes that regulate the Metropolitan Ag Preserve provide that the designation shall continue until either the landowner or the authority initiates exploration. That exploration requires an 8-year period. The only exception to that 8-year period is when a property is acquired through condemnation proceedings. As a matter of course, the DNR, when they acquire properties or easements for parks and trail purposes, do not use condemnation proceedings. The issue here is that if they acquire property or the rights to property through a voluntary purchase, such as a trail easement or fee simple purchase, we still have to live with the 8-year period. As Representative Detmer stated, that this bill would allow the termination or expiration of the Ag Preserve, Metropolitan Ag Preserve designation immediately upon acquired by request to the acquiring agency. As it applies to Scandia, there's about a 2-mile connection between William O'Brien State Park and the center of Scandia. DNR has held easements over 1.2 miles of the 2 miles for well over a decade, some of them closing in 20 years. In 2016, they acquired an easement on that last 0.8-mile section, and that completes the acquisition process. The easement covers roughly 7.5 acres of a 210-acre parcel along the western boundary. In December 2016, the owner did file for termination of the Ag Preserve over that portion of the property, and the DNR has recognized that no work can commence on that trail until after December 28, 2024. This bill in itself is very limited in scope in that it only relates to the properties that are designated in the metro area, have the Ag Preserve designation, and are required by either the DNR or local governments for park and trail purposes.
Any questions of the testifier? Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Detmer, any closing remarks?
Well, I'm going to go home after this. And thank you for letting me go a little bit early. But if you're ever on Highway 95 or 97, make sure you stop in Scandia. It's a neat little town. They have a great parade during the summer. It's called Taco Day Parade in Scandia. So, but it's a great place to spend some time, and it's along the St. Clair River there. So, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
President Fabian, do you want to renew your motion that House File 484 be recommended be referred to the Ways and Means Committee?
So renewed, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Brand. The next bill up is House File 1609. This bill was heard in the Water Division and was re-referred back to this division without amendments. Representative Fisher.
I would like to make the motion to accept.
Representative Fisher moves adoption of the Water Division report on House File 1609. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Report is adopted. I will move that House File 1609 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Brand.
Mr. Chair, there's also an amendment, the A1 amendment.
Representative Brand has an A1 amendment. Mr. Fisher, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Any discussion to the A1 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have amendment adopted. Representative Brand, to your House File 1609 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for having the opportunity to talk to you today about House File 1609. I live in St. Peter. One of the many benefits that we have of living in St. Peter is access to the Nobel Conference at Gustavus Adolphus College. Last year's subject was soil, entitled Living Soil, Universe Under.
I want that one.
And after listening to the speakers talk about soil and all the research and the different things that are being worked on, it brought me back to growing up as a kid on a farm in rural Wright County, playing in the dirt. And so today I'm kind of excited to talk to you about this, which seeks $115,000 from the Board of Water and Soil Resources to prepare a statewide action plan for soil health. This fund will be utilized within the University of Minnesota Water Resources Center and in consultation with the Ag Commissioner, the DNR Commissioner, and the PCA Commissioner. This funding will have a requirement that the Water Resource Center must make a recommendation to the legislature for protecting and improving the state's soil health. The purposes are for both agricultural and water quality purposes. So some questions to ask. How can soil play a role in carbon mitigation? How can we stop the erosion of topsoil? And what are some strategies to develop healthier watersheds? I've got a handout that talks a little bit about the Water Resource Center and the work that's being done in conjunction with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. So I'll have this be passed around to the folks in the committee to take a look at. And with a small introduction, I would just like to ask Angie Becker-Kadelka come up and also testify on behalf of Hauser.
Ms. Becker-Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and members, good evening. Angie Becker-Kadelka, Board of Water and Soil Resources. Mr. Chair and members, Representative Brand referred to last year the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources and the University of Minnesota's Water Resources Center formally committed to work together to form a Minnesota Office for Soil Health. It was designed to expand both the science around soil health, and really the second piece is to share practical information with farmers, with conservationists, and with others who manage our state soils. So a soil health action plan at this point in time makes a lot of sense, particularly in combining the research with the action, so really looking for applied science and identifying both water quality and economic changes based on that work. Thank you.
Any questions for the testifier? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Any closing remarks?
It's a small bill. It's a small amount of money to address a large topic, a large concern. And so I would just appreciate this being laid out with possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
I renew my motion that House File 1609 has amended be laid over for possible inclusion. Bill is laid over.
Thank you.
Representative Sandell. The next bill up on the agenda is House File 1141. The bill was heard in the Water Division and was re-referred back to the Division without amendments. Representative Fisher.
I would like to move adoption.
Representative Fisher moves adoption of the Water Division report on House File 1141. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The report is adopted. Representative Fisher, would you like to move House File 1140? Or Representative Sandell, you can move 1140.
I would like to do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I move that House File 1141 be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Sandell moves that House File 1141 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Sandell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of this committee and friends around the table. I've told a couple of you about the tiny creek that flows through my neighbor's land.
down a slight hill behind his house and through the culvert at our dead end road toward a pond about a quarter mile down the way. The creek is too small for fish or even chubs and shiners. And during the summer, the stream dries up and it's not much more than a wet trail through the woods. But this has been an unusual year, and the creek is already flooding its low banks. I haven't looked for the stream or the spring where the creek begins. I know a little about its beginnings, but I do know a little bit about the importance of the pond down the road and the route the water takes after its trip through the small forest. The slow settling of the water through the ground, drawn by gravity and filling the fractures and cracks of bedrock, gravel, and sand that make up the fragile treasure of our aquifer. And that's why I'm here today. Groundwater reserves are in decline in some parts of the state where development and heavy use has begun to threaten the water we have for our personal use, our recreation, irrigation, and industry. Residents in my district, in the Southeast Metro area, are concerned about the safety of their water, the vulnerability of the aquifer to contaminants that were left there 50 or 60 years ago. In an uncertain water future, it seems to me, it makes sense to protect that resource. We need to take steps through research and management to avoid shortages and future misuse of our water resources. Conservation and reuse of our groundwater are important, but that's not enough. In other parts of the world, where geology and economics make sense, scientists have begun returning water captured from runoff and collected from surface water back to the aquifer to recharge the aquifer. House File 1141 will help us learn if that would make sense in this part of the world. 1141 would allocate $350,000 to the Environmental Quality Board, and then by grant to the Water Resources Center at the University of Minnesota, one of the premier water research centers in the world, to study managed groundwater recharge and report its findings back to the legislature by January 2021. Mr. Steve Woods from the Freshwater Society, one of my favorite organizations, is here to provide details and fill in the blanks of our request that I've left out.
Mr. Woods.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Sandell, for carrying this bill. When it comes to groundwater, the idea is to use it, not lose it. Yet groundwater supplies are being consumed faster than they are being replenished in some parts of the state. They're declining, and that's a problem we need to solve so that we have rising aquifers and rising economies as well. What the study will do, has been laid out very well here, is to figure out where enhancing the aquifer's natural recharge rates makes geologic and economic sense both. And that's going to be a relatively small areas where that's going to pay off, or it does. Those communities are in a much better position to survive and thrive. That's my prepared remarks.
Any questions from the testifier? Mr. Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Why can't we use clean water fund dollars to do this study or other funds? Why do an appropriation like this?
Mr. Woods.
I have undertaken a series of three studies on this issue and have found this to be one of the missing elements of Minnesota's tools. And by the time we got through and were able to build a coalition of supporters, we were not in time to make it into the Clean Water Council's normal queue or their normal transparent review process. And we did not feel it was appropriate to just end run the council's recommendation process. So that's why we were requesting the general fund.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience would like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Sandell, any closing remarks?
Chair Hansen, thank you very much, committee members, for hearing the testimony and hearing our bill for the grant. Thank you.
And you would like to renew your motion that House File 1141 would be the best for possible inclusion?
Thank you, I would, Chair.
Bill is laid over.
Thanks.
Mr. McLaughlin? Do you want to do it? Or?
Sure. Thanks. My turn to have the hammer.
No, sure.
I think you do great with the hammer.
he asked if we could take it with us.
Pretty tough testifier coming up here.
Representative Hansen is bringing House File 2574, Department of Natural Resources grant to the Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center. Representative Hansen, you guys can do that.
I'll move House File 2574 for possible inclusion in the comments. Members, Madam Chair and members, this is the Mazer, Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center funding. And I have with me the director, Mr. Phelps.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Nick Phelps. I'm the director of the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center and a faculty member in the Fisheries, Wildlife, and Conservation Biology Department at the University of Minnesota. Thanks for taking the time in your busy schedule to hear this bill. Looking to support research-based solutions to our AIS problems. NACERC was created in 2012 with the goal to develop science-based solutions to our AIS problems. This was a pretty big deal at the time. It created a one-of-a-kind program that's already internationally recognized as a leader in the field. Initial investments that the state made to create NACERC have already begun to pay off with new tools being deployed, decisions being better informed, citizen science, lakeshore property owners, managers and professionals, industry and other stakeholders are engaged with applied research-based solutions right now in the field making a difference at the state and local levels. I presented at length in the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee earlier this session. So I'm going to keep my comments here very brief and just sum it up by saying that NACERC has made a lot of progress even in our early life. We're already making a difference, and I think that we've got a really good framework on which we can build and continue to work towards the solution. While we've learned a lot, we have a lot of work left to do. I can't wait for the day when I can sit here and tell you that we've got it all figured out, that zebra mussels are not something we need to worry about anymore, but the reality is research is going to take a little bit of time. These invaders have had a head start. They've had years, decades, in the case of common carp, a century, head start on us. We're behind the invasion front, and we've got a lot of work to do, but I can assure you, and we've seen this in all aspects of life, that research-based solutions are attainable for any number of complicated problems, including the control of invasive species. To speak specifically about House File 2574 and the funding requested for MACERC, we need long-term, stable research support. We've largely been supported by the ENRTF since our founding with appropriations in 2012, 2013, 2014, 2017, and we have one pending right now. I can't tell you how grateful we are for that support. The ENRTF and some of you in this room took a chance on MACERC and created the program, but it does create a challenge jumping from grant to grant. You think of these problems and these big, complicated things, it's hard, really, really hard to do in 2 or 4 year increments. We have to think about this in with long-term vision. If we start out towards one of those long-term efforts without having confidence that the funding will be there in the end to see it through, it puts us in a pretty precarious spot. As of now, MACERC's funding will end July 2021. I can tell you right now that's going to be too soon to getting to our end goal of solving the problem. I understand that this committee has very difficult budget decisions to make, and I'll admit that research is not a cheap request, and it's not going to be a quick fix. But I believe, and I very strongly believe this, that investments made in research will provide long-lasting cost savings for management and ecosystem services. We at MACERC have spent considerable amounts of time in the last 5 years to develop a long-term strategic plan. We've implemented an inclusive process to prioritize our research needs. We've built a significant interdisciplinary capacity through collaboration on and off campus and across the country and world. We've leveraged significant funding from the University of Minnesota and other local and federal sources to stretch our dollars as far as we can. We've created an advisory structure with high-level external advisory board, as well as a scientific technical committee. We've made a concerted effort to communicate our findings in an understandable, usable way and coordinate with stakeholders at all levels to translate science into action. I could go on, but in short, I promise you that we made every effort to ensure that the state's investment in research is being most effectively and efficiently spent towards our end goal. I passed out a few handouts, one just an infographic page to summarize what we're doing. Also two letters of support, one from our advisory board, one from the DNR's AIS advisory committee. And we've had a lot of other people who are coming to us in support of long-term table funding in this bill in particular, including the Minnesota Coalition of Lake Associations, individual lake associations, counties, watershed districts, and AIS professionals. You name it, if they're involved with this problem, we're probably working with them, and they're probably supportive. So members of the committee, thank you again for taking the time to hear about this and considering it as you go through your funding process.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know it's not the first time you've been in our committee, and I think, you know, when you look at this chart of the funding, I mean, I think maybe this is what we can expect when something that we've invested those funds from the ENRTF initially. It was a good idea, it worked, and now that it's established and we can see how it can benefit the whole state going forward, that it makes sense to me that we'd be at the point where we're talking about using general fund dollars to keep you guys going. Because and the other piece of it that I think is important for folks to realize is I think kind of unlike some of the other projects and different things that different state entities do, I know that MACIRC is really dedicated to teaching average folks how to be more engaged and how to do, you know, whether it's Starry Trek or whatever the programs are, and I think that there are more benefits than we probably even know because that information is out there in our communities on the ground with the folks living there. So really supportive of the bill and the work that you do.
Thank you, Mr. Phelps. I will turn it over to you after I ask Representative Eklund to take over chairing for me. We'll be back.
Any other member questions, Representative Sandell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to support the bill as well. I'm really intrigued by it and the work you're doing. But I'm really worried about this. Do you think we're going to be able to solve this problem with preventive measures and education? Or do you think this is just going to be an ongoing project that we look at forever and try to establish boundaries?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a really good question. It's a hard one to answer. Our approach isn't necessarily silver bullet answers, cures the pill we drop in the lake. We're making incremental steps here. Prevention, early detection, management, control, all aspects of these problems. So while our ultimate end game is to eliminate these problems, it may take a little while to get there. And during that time, though, I think we'll make a difference and find ways to more efficiently spend our management dollars. We'll be able to figure out, for example, where best to locate a watercraft inspector so we have the best return on that investment. We can figure out how to work with the problems we have now while trying to figure out how to solve them. So eventually that's where we want to get, but while we're doing that, we've got a lot of other things happening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, twice now I've heard you use the term, this is going to take a little while. In research terms, what's the definition of a little while?
Test fire.
Mr. Chair, to give you some perspective, for example, it took about 20 years for researchers to get their hands around sea lamprey. That was a problem that was thought to be an impossible one to solve. And through dedicated research and, frankly, millions of dollars spent working on it, the sea lamp array problem is under control. They aren't eradicated. The problem is not gone, but it's manageable. And that is a success story for the Great Lakes. I think we could, hopefully, perhaps, that is possible here. That is big picture outcomes. There are other things like preventing the migration of the invasive carp up the Mississippi River. There are things we could do in very short order to prevent them from coming in. So there's a whole range of what that might look like, and depending on the species and the state of the problem now, it might take shorter or longer bits of time. But yeah, I don't want to oversell this as a quick solution. Research does take time. It's just the reality of it.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish you millions of dollars worth of good luck.
Any other questions from the committee? Representative Hanson.
Thank you. I was at the Northwest Sports Show over the weekend, and while I was there, I had a Facebook memory pop up, and it was Dr. Phelps, I think 5 years ago, with a giant slab of frozen Big Ed carp there showing folks, and that's 5 years ago. It seems like yesterday. And I think that's part, it kind of confirms the message that you just sent. And I know that our peers in other states look at what you're doing and are astounded because there's nothing quite like it in other states. And so I hope we can find a way to keep this going. And I would renew my motion that House File 2574.
Representative Backer, did you have a question? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Anson. I thought
I could come up with one if you want.
2574 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Bill's laid over.
Chair, I move that House File 2258 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, we heard this in the policy committee. I know there's some angst over the bill. We will continue to work on the bill in the next few days, I think, to define it clearer its fiscal performance. So I think Representative Green has an amendment.
Representative Green, would you care to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A19 amendment. In the bill, in subsection 2, It moves for a prohibition on the plastics that may or may not be identified, and it just seems to me to be a little bit of jumping the gun until after the products are identified first, and then to see if they're what the impact that they're going to have, or if there is an impact on there, and so the amendment just deletes the portion that says it's going to move to a prohibition. And the prohibition can certainly come after we've identified the problem, if there is one, and what that problem is. So it's just kind of holding back so we don't end up in 2023 and unable to use products that without really looking at whether or not they're viable.
Thank you, Representative Green. To the amendment, Representative Hanson.
I would oppose the amendment. I understand what I do, and I would like to keep that prohibition in there at this time.
Is there anybody any other comments to the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Is there any other questions for Representative Hanson? Is there anybody in the audience wishes to testify for or against this bill? Closing remarks.
We'll continue working on this. Move that House File 2258 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
The bill is laid over. We are adjourned till tomorrow.